Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Open Book, your weekly spiritual book club. I am Lori Strawn, and with me, as always, is my good friend Alice Shelton. Hi, Alice.
Hey, Lori.
Well, as Alice said the last time, the best thing about our time together is that it really, truly is ours. So even though we took a week off, we're here now, better late than never, and today we're going to explore a couple of poems by Scott Cairns, who is a professor of creative writing and a noted spiritual poet. I stumbled upon his work recently and have become an avid fan. So here's our first poem, and it's entitled Articulation. What I have come to say is never quite sufficient. What I have come to say falls ever short, if reliably. My one, my only certainty. This fact for now can prove both deep discouragement and deep elusive hope. I've come to trust our words' most modest crapshoot. I have come as well to see their limit as my proof. If one fresh morning I should come to apprehend, however full with presence every breath now is, and even now, I have a sense my words would grow so heavy as to still. I suppose that morning then would open to our eighth day, whose sunrise will not set. Well, Alice, I really found some resonance in this poem when I was thinking about my own experiences with prayer. My articulation with God falls ever short as well. What do you think the poet is saying, though, when he describes that fact of falling short as both deep discouragement and deep elusive hope?
Well, an interesting segue in my mind is that just yesterday when I was meeting with my spiritual director, I was having a lot of difficulty articulating, and I love the word articulation because it's so frequently not what happens when you try to do it.
Oh, yeah.
But I was telling her that as I get older and I go more and more deeply into prayer and time with just spending time with God, it's more and more clear to me that I have these pictures and images and almost feelings in my mind and my heart that I know the feeling of what they feel to me inside. I know what they look like in my mind. But to translate that into words is just increasingly difficult for me. Mm-hmm. And I almost don't want to do it sometimes because then it places limiters on what I'm thinking and I don't feel that way. So I think that's what the poet is trying to do here, and I think that's the meaning of something having both deep discouragement and elusive hope. It's like the more you try to explain it, the more you limit it, and that's the disappointing part. But knowing that then allows you to just continue to explore and walk on and allow it to grow and be larger and larger and beyond your comprehension.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I have always had, I guess, in my mind, the hope that at some point I will land on the right word or words. And, you know, once in a while I'll get like a little glimmer of that in something I've written. And that'll, you know, it's so encouraging and so, you know, pleases me to no end. But do you think we ever do really find the right words or even shadows of them?
Well, the retreat I was at with the SPs this spring, Sister Ann Sullivan talked about thin times where God is really, you know, we just can experience God and there's a very, almost a thin veil between us and God. And I think there are times like that with words where a certain line that you write or that you read or think about maybe comes right to the point of explaining or articulating, if you will, what you're trying to say or the prayer that you're trying to understand. Mm-hmm. And I think you receive those same things from God sometimes in answer to prayer. So I think there are moments of it, but I doubt that anyone sustains that over time. I really do think that's something that happens after our lives on Earth. There's no completion of it.
Oh, well, that would definitely give me a deep, elusive hope if, one day, you know, beyond this life, we might get there.
But, you know, Lori, the other thing, just real quickly, that I think about, particularly with your writing and the things I've read of yours, and I'm sure probably my own, but what's nice is that sometimes I will read something that you've written, and it creates some crispness and clarity, in part because of the words you've written, but also in part because of my knowing of you and what maybe you were meaning to say or hoping to say without even really understanding that you were doing it. So I think there are times like that, and that's why I think both of us love poetry, because sometimes we read what someone else has said, and it's like, oh, you read my mind.
Yeah, yes. In fact, I did a big article about on my blog about this whole subject, kind of wrote it out of my system last week. So, yeah, I'm kind of going back there now, have to get back in that mindset. Well, the poet says he has come to see his word's limit as his proof. What proof of what do you think?
That's confusing, isn't it?
I think it has to be
speaking to proof of his faith, proof that there's something greater than himself out there, because he's unable to even lasso it in and constrain it and explain it or even think or experience it. So I think proof of his faith. What do you think?
That really says it much better than the way I was thinking about it. It's true. I suppose it's proof that God is so much bigger and greater than our little puny words can manage to convey.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, if God were a lesser being, we wouldn't have so much trouble finding the right words to approach prayer, would we?
No, I think that's right. And we would be, it's the same reason that music is so powerful and art is so powerful, because it's not constrained by the individual creation. It speaks differently to every person. I think prayer is the same way. Poetry is the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, the poet seems to feel that if he were to accurately apprehend God's presence, his words would, quote, grow so heavy as to still. Do you agree? Or do you think it might have the opposite effect? Which, of course, gives away my own bias.
Yeah. Well, I can see where he's coming from, because I it's almost like, you know, a spoiler that it would be if you could contain God with a description that was apt enough, then what would the search need to be continued about? You know, if you get it, then why would it need to go on? So I kind of see it being both, because I think I tend to agree with what I think you're going to say, which is the opposite, that it would be there. It's just eternity, Lori. There is no way of having words that apprehend it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and I think maybe that speaks to me more so maybe than this person. I'm a writer, and I'm not a great extemporaneous speaker, as anyone who has listened to the show knows. I have trouble connecting my brain to my mouth. I'm used to connecting my brain to my hands, which is why I gesticulate a lot also. So being silent with God is not the tough part to me. What I want is to find the perfect words.
Mm-hmm.
And if not perfect, at least, you know, transcendent in some way. And I guess as somebody who struggles to find those words, to accept an eventuality for which words are unnecessary, I don't know. I find it interesting that a poet would choose to lose his words when, for me, that's my key, that's my power.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the hardest thing to give for the poet to give up, and maybe that's part of the, you know, the sacrifice for the search. I don't know. That's a good question. I hadn't thought about it. See, your writing brings you to that differently than I approach it, so that's cool. Hey, that's why we have two of us on this show.
Oh, heck yeah, that's why.
Mm.
Well, what is the poet ultimately saying in this poem about prayer, and do you agree or disagree?
It's a little hard to encapsulate it for me.
Yeah.
I think certainly a kind of a Nike, just do it sort of concept comes from it, that it's an important function, it's an important experience and exercise, if you will. So that probably is the most foundational thing, but that it's confounding, that it's not always just comfort. I mean, I think there are those out there, myself included at times, where, you know, we want to pray and we want to feel hugged and loved and supported and surrounded by warmth and light. And that isn't what prayer is about a lot of times. I mean, prayer mm-hmm. can be a very empty, lonesome, kind of draggy experience, heavy experience, if you will. And so that's part of the just do it. I mean, it's like an exercise. It is something you need to just continually do. And it's something that I don't know that it's something you get better at or worse at, but you just persist through. It's not supposed to be an accomplishment. It's a practice.
Ooh, I like that. That was a good thought there. And I think I've got to the point where I feel like if I'm doing it right, maybe I'm never going to feel like I'm doing it right, if that makes any sense.
Oh, it is. It's very, to me, it's akin to humility, you know. We will never, probably the less humble we feel, the more humble we are. I mean, the more progress we're making, because our awareness of our areas of needing work is more and more developing over time. No, I think that's right.
Sometimes I feel almost like prayer is, and I don't mean this to sound selfish, but I almost feel like it's more for me than it is for God, in that I find that it is a way of clarifying for myself how I feel, whereas God already knows. I mean, God can get right to the heart of things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that in your prayer?
Oh, yeah, I totally do. I mean, yeah. It's so funny that you say that, because my initial gut reaction was to say, well, duh, Lori, God doesn't need anything from us.
Yeah, true. So do we pray?
Yeah, I mean, we pray probably like we do all things in some ways for ourselves. I mean, some of us work very hard to analyze it and be intentional about it and be of service. But yeah, I mean, but I say jokingly, God doesn't need anything from us, but God does want our friendship and our communication and our love and our attention. I mean, I think that's why God keeps creating situations where we realize we're being drawn to God.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And maybe that's the point of prayer. Well, the next poem we're going to talk about is also about prayer. It's called Possible Answers to Prayer. Your petitions, though they continue to bear just the one signature, have been duly recorded. Your anxieties, despite their constant, relatively narrow scope and inadvertent entertainment value, nonetheless serve to bring your person vividly to mind. Your repentance, all but obscured beneath a burgeoning yellow fog of frankly more conspicuous resentment, is sufficient. Your intermittent concern for the sick, the suffering, the needy poor, is sometimes recognizable to me, if not to them. Your angers, your zeal, your lip-smackingly righteous indignation toward the many whose habits and sympathies offend you. These must burn away before you'll apprehend how near I am, with what fervor I adore precisely these, the several who rouse your passions. Yeah. Well, this poem is clearly from the point of view of God. What is God trying to say here, do you suppose?
Oh, get over yourselves. You take the log out of your own eye. I have two favorites. Your intermittent concern for the sick. That sounds like a business memo. And your lip-smackingly righteous indignation. This is such a weakness of mine. And I like a signal goes off in me when I recognize in myself righteous indignation, and certainly when I recognize it in those around me who I love. It's just like, oh, how angry are you about that standing here doing nothing about it, you know, in recognizing it so readily in others, that righteous indignation about what everyone else is not doing to make the world a better place. So,
now, see, to me, the one that got me was your anxieties, despite their constant, relatively narrow scope and inadvertent entertainment value.
Yeah.
That really got me, because I am a worrier. And I thought, boy, God really must laugh at me sometimes and think, you silly thing. In a week, you're not even going to think about this anymore.
Yeah, I love it. It isn't it? Who would have thought of your petitions, though they continue to bear just the one signature?
Yeah,
oh,
that gets me
it.
Every time.
I love it. I have such admiration for people who have the ability to do. This is an example of something like, oh, I've thought this, but I've never put it in words this way. I would have never crafted a poem this way. But it's such a wonderful foil to be used for people like you and me to think about and talk about the challenges we have and the weaknesses we have and how we. I mean, isn't prayer sometimes just so self-serving when you think about it? Sometimes
yeah.
I think about that at the petitions at church. I think, oh.
Yeah, I wonder what God really thinks about our prayers. You know, just from what comes up in this poem about that, it's entertaining. They bring your person vividly to mind. You know, it's kind of like a letter from a kindly relative or something.
Yeah.
I wonder what God thinks about our prayers. What do you think?
I have this vision in my mind because it's my understanding of how prayer and written things go. I almost have this picture of these slips of paper floating up to this giant urn or something that's sitting at God's side. And, you know, angels just bringing them up one by one. This is like this parade of things being almost like a ticker tape reading across. God's reading them and just taking them all in. I mean, not even really reacting to them, just kind of absorbing it into God's self and creating it. It just becomes like part of the universe and part of the things that surround us. And, I don't know, that sounds really unclear, but that's kind of how I envision it.
Yeah, and I think God really, really must love us, because otherwise that would be unbearable. What you're setting up.
The constant just ping, 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 ping
mm-hmm.
of desires and desires and desires. And even the ones that aren't selfish desires, you know, where they really are genuinely prayer for other people or intervention for other people. Yeah. And what's interesting, though, this morning one of the readings was the, I can't remember what gospel it's from, but you do not receive because you do not ask. You know, even with all the asking and petitioning that we do, there's still a perspective from God of, you know, you do not get what you want because you do not even know how to ask. You do not ask for the things that you really need. Like, we can't even identify the root of what it is we're needing to pray about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I think, a major reason why my prayers fall so short is because I don't even know what I'm really praying for.
Yeah. No, and do you find yourself sometimes in prayer, and we may have covered this, but where you literally stop and
mm-hmm.
say, why am I telling God this? God knows this. I'm trying to craft this manipulative sentence. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like,
yeah,
why
exactly.
try to do
I'm
words?
Making up
yeah.
a story.
Yeah. 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 Rehearsing it, like rehearsing
mm-hmm.
our arguments.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, as if God can't see through the words you've crafted to communicate
right.
what you're praying about. Which
yeah.
is why you hear people talk about just, my spiritual director says that someone told her once that they think saints just threw up their hands and said, I'm no more special than anybody else. I don't know what else to do. I'm throwing my hands up and giving it to God. You know, that's really, where the ultimate prayer is, just I trust.
Yeah.
I will follow. But boy,
yeah.
it's hard to get there.
Oh, heck yeah. Well, speaking of things that are hard to get to, what do you suppose the God of this poem adores so fervently about the several who rouse our passions? What does that mean?
That kind of confounded me a little bit. I think the thing, what the deepest concerns we have are, you know, what are the things that we are acting on and that are moving us to care more about someone else than ourselves? And you know, what places in our lives are we really leaning in hard for the things that are the right and the just ways to serve God? Do you have a different response to that?
The only thing I could come up with is that people who are easy for us to love and live with, yes, they're wonderful blessings. But the people that kind of rouse our passions by challenging us, if we have any self-awareness at all, they cause us to deal with our prejudices and our petty dislikes and to analyze, at least to some degree, why does this person bother me so much? And
mm-hmm.
usually that's because I find with me, it's because of a defect in myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe that will stimulate us to overcome it somehow.
Yeah,
you know, people who annoy us force us to grow or get better.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of how I think about when things in other people bother me. I mean, when I can be self-aware and get over my righteous indignation.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And think about it, I do realize that, yeah, everything comes back to issues I'm having within myself, relationships that aren't working out correctly, you know, shortcomings I have, whatever. And that is another place where I think prayer is really hard, because even more so than like therapy or something, you have to be honest if you're going to work at it. You really do, because who are you fooling? Only yourself.
Right.
Because God's not fooled.
Right. And going back to what you just said about saints throwing up their hands, I think this is another case where that comes in. Because if what we're supposed to do is rid ourselves of indignation against people who offend us before we can even start to understand or appreciate God, there's going to be some throwing up of hands that has to be done.
Yep.
How else can we do that? How do we approach that? Is that asking more of us than we could commit to as human beings?
Mm-hmm. Well, which goes to, you know, I'm doing a lot of reading and listening to this David White, this Irish poet and
yes.
psychologist, and he really gets deep. He did this one section on anger that talks about anger being the greatest passion we possess, because it truly shows us what things we are most deeply protective of about ourselves and what our truest, deepest selves are. And I've been really, that really has kind of ticked me off. I'm angry about anger. Because it's true. When I really dig into it, it's really true. The things that I protect with anger are some of the deepest wounds in me. They are the deepest, probably the deepest values. And you just, you begin to realize what a created self we have in ourselves. And we have created so much of this self that, and to strip that away over time is difficult.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that only saints are capable of doing? Can normal folks ever get there?
I think normal folks can really dig in and work at it. I don't know if saints ever really get there. I mean, I think saints attain heaven, but I think you and I do too. But I think the saintly effort is the effort that it takes. I mean, I think it takes a lot of work. And in some ways it also takes being somewhat crazy and clueless. I mean, I think about St. Francis, and St. Francis was kind of crazy and clueless.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of them probably are.
Yeah. Actually, if I had to kind of sum up this show, it would be prayer, get over yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It's really true. Oh, Lori. We crack ourselves up.
Yes, we do. Well, you have anything else you'd like to add on these poems, or are we about done?
Well, you had one other question that I just thought was interesting. You mentioned that you thought the tone of this last poem was really formal. Kind of like, and I think I used the word memo, like it was memo-like. Why do you suppose the poet selected that formal tone? Do you suppose that has to do with how he views God? Or I just thought it was kind of an interesting, would a woman have chosen that same posture in writing it? I don't know.
That is an interesting question, now that you reframe it in that way. I don't know. I think it adds to the humor of the poem for sure.
Yeah.
Putting it in those terms as if you were getting a work evaluation or something.
Yeah. Well, and you kind of can't, I mean, I kind of can picture in my mailbox getting something like this. It's like from our neighborhood association or something, you know, paint your mailbox brown, ladybug. Funny. I do think, and I'm so hopeful of it, but I'm pretty sure of it too. I can't wait to have more clarity about God's sense of humor. I mean, I think we see that this poet thinks God has a sense of humor.
Yes. Yes, and God firmly is holding his tongue in cheek there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think about, there are lots of ways I could name, just check off things in nature that make you realize God has a sense of humor. I mean, some of the funny animals. I was watching some National Geographic program on deep sea animals the other day, and I thought, oh, the Lord has a sense of humor, no doubt about it. Some of the mating habits of some of the creatures underwater just made us laugh out loud on our couch, thinking, you know, God created all this. Who can? That's the thing. I still cannot get anyone who really is into science and biology and all that happens in that world, how you cannot believe in God and see all that creation. No one could have thought all that stuff up.
Yeah. Yeah, and to think that it was just a bunch of blind happenstance.
Yeah.
You know, it just kind of fell out that way.
Yeah. No way. I mean, you watch things on that level, and some of the, oh my gosh, there's just no way, no way. And it's no issue for me at all to hold those two together, which I've talked about a million times. I will never get that. Why scientists have such difficulty with theology and creation. I don't understand it.
Well, it continues to be a problem, so.
Yeah.
But that is, again, a show for another day.
Well,
and
thanks
so,
for joining us, Lori.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, everybody. We're going to wrap it up, and we'll talk to you again next week. Until then, if you're looking for God, just open a book.
Have a great week.